Session number 22498, Reel 3.
Peter Hall, Reel 3. Did the Germans make much of an attempt to get you back?
I don't know. I never saw them again. And really, I think that's probably one of the reasons why I took to the water.
What happened once you got back after your escape?
I made my landfall, and I got shot at by a Dorset soldier from about 15 yards. Happily, he missed. We had rather a sharp conversation after that.
Did he tell you where your battalion was?
No, he told me where his own battalion headquarters were, and, sorry, his company headquarters were. He took me to the company. The company commander sent me to the battalion, and the battalion sent me back to my battalion.
What reception did you get amongst the Dorsets?
They were extremely kind to me. I was rather sorry for what I'd said to the soldier.
Were you able to give them any information about the Germans?
No, not really. Nothing that they didn't know themselves. I mean, they were very involved in the thing as well. In fact, they gave me more information than I was able to give them, because they knew where the forward positions of our own brigade were at that time, which I hadn't known.
What happened once you got back to the battalion?
I went back to my company and everybody was pretty nice to me and said, well, you know, silly old twit for getting caught and that sort of thing, but that was a war, really.
So the Germans hadn't interrogated you?
No.
And then, what are your next memories?
I have to think for a bit. By this time, while I was sort of paddling about in the Rhine, the battalion had attacked Elst on a two-company front and captured the Elst, but lost two company commanders in the battle, two majors. After that, another battalion passed through us, and we were out of the battle for a couple of days, which gave us a chance to lick our wounds and sort ourselves out of it. This was a regular occurrence, as you would appreciate, that units leapfrogged forward, you know, in front of each other. It was, as I say, like a leapfrog sort of exercise. So it wasn't constantly in action. There was a fair number of periods when one had an opportunity of getting a change of clothing, and the mobile bath unit came up, and you know, one could sort of get back to a bit of normality. So I wasn't permanently, you know, trying to do the deeds of derring do, things like that.
And then?
Sorry, I have to think what happened after that.
Yes?
Yes. Okay, sorry. We then moved south, and for what tactical reason, I have not the faintest idea. It was obvious at this time that the attempt to relieve the airborne had failed. And we then moved south into an area called the Deckerwald, where there's a lot of woods. And we established ourselves in these woods and started to patrol eastward through the woods. And again, a lot of our time was spent in patrolling to try and find out what remnants of the enemy were still left on the island. And it was about this time that September sunshine changed to September sleet and snow. And the winter war set in, which was really, it ceased to be a war of maneuver and movement, as it had ever since the campaign started up to then, and really became a static 2 or 3 months, when some various stupid things happened, because in the snow, both the German army and ourselves took to white snow camouflage suits, which we wore over our uniforms. And on one patrol, I went out with a selected partner who wasn't Williams at this time, and I'm not going to say his name because it's a little embarrassing for him. Anyway, I told him to stay on a ridge. I went down to see if some buildings were occupied. I found out that they had recently been occupied. There were ration tins, ammunition cases, and various things. And I guessed about 10 men, probably supporting a Spandau, had been there, but they'd gone. They'd obviously moved eastward. So I got back to where my partner was, and he wasn't there. And there were two pairs of footprints going, one going west and one going east. And it was apparent that both sets of people had been running. I got back to my company area. The first bloke I met was my partner. I said, "Where the bloody hell have you been?" He said, "I'm terribly sorry, sir, but I was following you down and watching what you were doing and prepared to offer you covering fire. And I felt a tap on my shoulder and a voice said, 'Hans, Hans.' And we looked at each other and went, 'Whoa,' and ran off in opposite directions." I should have put him on a charge, I suppose, but the thought of these two young men giving each other the fright of their lives in the middle of nowhere made me laugh, and I couldn't charge him after that. I didn't select him for another patrol, though. There was yet another occasion. Again, this time, I was commanding a fighting patrol. In other words, we were told to bag a prisoner. And I was given the instruction that I was not actually to go into the with the final snatch party, but I was to occupy an OP in case it was necessary to direct artillery fire to get the snatch party out of trouble. Anyway, it was snowing like crazy, and I established my observation post, though I couldn't see very much. Eventually, to cut a long story, the snatch party came back. They hadn't found anybody there. There were only five, and I counted them right back. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Suddenly, 6, 7. And apparently two German soldiers had thought that it was one of their own forces and tagged along with the patrol. So we did get our identification, but not the way we'd planned it.
Any other memories from this winter? Did you stay the whole winter in the deck as well?
Well, we moved about a little bit into Holland, and we were in Holland. We moved about a little bit. The division didn't move very far, but brigades sort of were taken out of the line and given a bit of rest and so on, and we changed about and relieved each other, you know. And there was quite a lot of things going on, a lot of artillery exchanges, particularly from the the heavy German artillery, which was defending the Siegfried Line, which wasn't very far away. Can I take another break?
In how much discomfort were you all in winter conditions in Holland?
It depended. If we were occupying farm buildings, there were usually cellars, and one could get some sort of relief. One's company's headquarters were usually in the cellars. But other than that, one was in slit trenches, and it was cold and miserable. And
were you getting adequate supplies of food?
Yes. Food supply and general replacement, well, it wasn't difficult because we were fairly static. And A. Eschron didn't have to sort of follow up wells behind the fighting units. It could be fairly close up behind them. And our food was always cooked back in A. Eschron and brought up in a 1,500 weight vehicle by the colour sergeant of the company and the cooks. And it was in hay boxes. And we got good hot food, although it wasn't terribly exciting. And you know, you, after time, soybean sausage ceases to be a culinary delight.
How did you get on with the local civilians?
There weren't any, until we got to areas where we were on rest. And we got quite frequent periods when we were on rest and with the local civilians, and they were very good. There was one story I think I might tell you about, it concerns our rations and some German civilians. Some
Dutch
civilians, I beg your pardon. This was in we'd been in the line for about 5 days, and we were going to be relieved by another unit. And we were going back to a small German village, which I think was, a small Dutch village, which I think was called Mook. I can't quite remember, which still had about 300 Dutch civilians living in it. Now, we had discovered that between the German forward positions and our own, there was a pigsty. And in the pigsty was a large pig. And John Ricketts, my company commander, and I decided it would be rather nice if we could give the company a meal of fresh pork whilst we were on rest. The difficulty was to bag the pig. So I arranged that I would take two stretcher bearers, a Bren gunner, and myself out. Remember, this was only about 70 yards away from the German positions. I would shoot the pig with a pistol, and we would then put it on the stretcher and take it back to our own lines. And a chap called Corporal Chambers, who was a butcher in civilian life, and I were involved in this. And I was under the impression that if you had to kill a pig by cutting its throat, otherwise the meat would be spoiled. But Chambers said, no, it's perfectly okay to kill the animal as long as you then immediately cut its throat and bloodlet it. And so he came out with us as well. I was relieved because I thought I didn't want to. The thought of a pig squealing in the middle of nowhere, A, because I would be sorry for the pig, and B, because I don't think that the rather belligerent young gentleman opposite would have taken that very kindly. Anyway, off we went in the middle of the night. I eventually shot the pig, timing it with a shell that was going over, so that hopefully the sound of my pistol shot would be covered by the bang of an artillery explosion. We got the pig back without much trouble. Chambers did his butchering bit splendidly. Then we had another problem. Because we were in Holland, we were not supposed to take any food that the Dutch would say was, you know, their property. We put the old pig on the stretcher again, covered him with a blanket, put a steel helmet on his head, on the top of the blanket, and a rifle lying by the side. And I paced behind solemnly with my head bowed down. And we went into this village, and hopefully thinking that the local inhabitants would think that the pig was a poor chap who'd bought it in the woods. And the local villagers turned out, it was a strongly Roman Catholic village. The men removed their hats and crossed themselves, and the women curtsied and did likewise. And I felt like crying at our subterfuge and our dishonesty, really. It all went satisfactorily. At one time I noticed with some horror, though, a trotter sticking out of the bottom of the blanket, but I don't think anybody else noticed that. And eventually everybody had a pork supper. I didn't enjoy mine much after that.
Did you ever get any leave?
Yes. When Antwerp was relieved, a leave centre was established in Antwerp. And there I was challenged to a duel.
By whom?
By a rather furious Fleming. The story was, really, that there was a nightclub in the bottom in this hotel, and having been deposited there, it was only a 48 hours leave. I got my best kit from the quartermaster at B Echelon, and I had a shower and was sort of dressed up, and I got into this hotel, and, you know, all modcons and en suite things. It was this. And I decided I'd go down to this nightclub and see what the form was. And I went down, and there was a cabaret going on. And some poor Belgian chap was doing an appalling imitation of Harpo Marx. And happily, there was a table of rather drunken British officers who booed him off the stage. Well, I didn't like that, and so I went up and told them I thought they were a bunch of bastards. And one of these chaps took a swing at me. He was drunk, I wasn't, he missed, and I took a swing at him and didn't. And fortunately, it didn't create a big scene, and the other drunk sort of removed him quietly, and nobody else seemed to know very much, except there was a rather exotic female voice. She said, "I saw what you just did and I applaud you." And I got myself a date. And I had a very good evening. At the end of the evening, I asked her if I could escort her back home. And she said, yes, she'd enjoy that. And she said that she lived with her mother in a flat. And her mother was a munition worker and sometimes worked overnight. And if she was not in the flat, and my girlfriend, I didn't know, I can't remember what her name was, would sort of switch aside the blackout curtain, and I was to stand in the street, and I could go up. She said, "Have a cup of coffee." So anyway, the blackout curtain was switched, and up I went. And the following day, I was due to go back to the battalion, and I asked her if she'd come and have a cup of coffee with me in my hotel before she went back. She said yes, she'd like to. And she arrived looking very pretty, and I was there, and we had some coffee. And she said, asked me if I had any cigarettes. And I said, yeah, I had, but they were in my bedroom. I'll go get a packet. And when I came back, she wasn't there. There was coffee all over the wall. And a couple of blokes who were wearing the 43rd Division sign sitting on a new nearby table, and they said, you're bloody lucky. When you went off, enormous great Belgians stormed in, shouted at her, and she shouted at him. And she rushed out, and he rushed after her. And you were lucky not to be here. You'd have been involved in this. But anyway, the landlord, the manager of the hotel came up, and he said, you know, this has caused a bit of a scene. What are you going to do about it? And so on. And I said, well, I was very sorry. I had nothing to do with me. And he said, well, he said, I know this lady. She's been here before, and very shortly, her live-in boyfriend will arrive and challenge you to a duel, or say this could be settled for a monetary amount. The other two blokes in the 43rd Division and I said, well, this isn't on. So we made a plot. Sure enough, this chap stormed in again and stormed up to me and said how I'd insulted him and that it could only be rectified by a duel of pistols. And at that moment, the manager walked in with two military policemen, which we had organized, and the chap looked at them and he realized that we'd rumbled him. Turned around on his heel, dashed out of the hotel. There were two more Belgian policemen waiting for him outside. But I was rather glad to get back to the sharp end after all that.
So was it a put-up job?
Oh, yes. I was a sucker.
When you were in Antwerp, were you under enemy fire at all?
No. It was quite peaceful. Apparently, there had been occasions when, in fact, a cinema had been hit with a lot of British troops in it and quite a lot of casualties occurred. But nothing when I was there. It was perfectly normal, really. Rather pleasant interlude, apart from the fact that I had made a bit of a fool of myself.
Whilst during this winter, how dangerous was the patrolling which you did?
I think it was more uncomfortable than dangerous. Occasionally, We lost a patrol, but by and large we've become fairly skillful at this sort of business. The casualties that occurred during this sort of winter period of not much mobility were usually the result of artillery fire rather than anything else.
For what did you get your DSO? Was it in this period or afterwards?
Afterwards. I I got promoted. After the... We were given the job of breaching the Siegfried Line. And we actually rolled it up from north to south. And this was a time when there were quite heavy casualties. And the senior commander of A Company got wounded at a place called Gok, on the Gok Escarpment. And I was then promoted to major to go and command A Company. So Williams and I were off again. And during this time, we had two very testing battles. One was the Battle of the Anhalt Cross, one was the Battle of the Autobahn, and a fortnight later the Battle of the Anhalt Crossroads. Can we take a break and...
Can we deal with the Autobahn attack first, please?
Yes, right. The Autobahn attack was... The Autobahn attack took place on the 27th of March. By this time, we had crossed the Rhine, and we were on the east bank, and making our way up towards Bremen. The battalion was ordered to attack a feature called the Autobahn, which was heavily defended by German parachutists, who were not only entrenched on the Autobahn itself, but in positions forward of the Autobahn. Now, the Autobahn wasn't really an Autobahn at all, because it was still under construction. And so really what it was a lot of heaped up rubble, bits of earth and things, but had formed, was a very good position to hold because it commanded totally open ground in front of it. We were part of a brigade attack. We were the right-hand battalion to attack, and on the left of us, the Somerset Light Infantry were attacking at the same time. On our left, we were supposed to be supported by the 51st Highland Division, but for some reason best known to themselves, they didn't turn up until the battle was over. I don't know why. I never did discover. Our own battalion attacked with two companies forward. One D company on the left, B A company, which was my company, on the right. Now, it was totally open ground and under view of the Autobahn, so we again had to rely on our own fire and movement to get us forward. Now, fire and movement is the most important element of tactics, because you never get two sides, both with their heads up, both bringing accurate fire to bear on each other at the same time. The trick is to get fire superiority, which then confirms on you the ability to move forward, even if the ground's as flat as a billiard table. And that, in fact, is what we did. Now, we have three, each attacking company had three tanks under our command. Unfortunately, although the weather was sunny, the ground was frightfully boggy, and about 200 yards from the objective, all the tanks got stuck in the mud. Now, this did not deter them from being able to bring a very fierce force of fire to bear on the Autobahn positions. And three tanks had about the equivalent firepower of two companies of infantry. The trouble was that I found out that the tanks that under my command weren't firing where I wanted them to fire. So I went up to the troop leader's tank, and there was a telephone at the back of the tank, and you pressed a button, you could speak to the commander on the telephone. I did that and found that the damn thing wasn't working. But it was important that I get in touch with him, so I had to climb up on the top of this damn tank, which was 10 feet above the ground, and hammer on the turret with my machine pistol until he sort of poked his head out. And he started off, "I want the bloody," and I said, "Shut up, you're firing in the wrong place, listen to me, this is where you'll fire," and I pointed to where he had to fire. I was, you can imagine, as quick as I could be about giving these orders, because it wasn't a very healthy place to be, stuck 10 feet above the ground with a lot of rubbish flying about. So I got that sorted. When I was up there, I saw that D Company were in dead trouble on my left. They couldn't move. But what they could do was to support. I was going to do a right flanking shallow attack. What they could do was to support the tank fire and the artillery fire with their own fire as well. Now, I had no wireless communication to Brian Elder, the company commander of D Company, so I had to sprint across to talk to him. And this was in the open, and I sprinted, and I saw as I was going.